I guess the most frustrating thing about government is that there are people who vote on issues for the pure reason that they think that it will appeal to a certain constituent group that will perpetuate them in office. I've never believed in limiting terms. Seems to me if the people want to send them down there, whether they're bimbos or not, that's what democracy is all about. But I think it is a shock to a lot of people that there is a lot of cynicism in government on the part of some of the people who are elected to office, who take actions to perpetuate their existence.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. I am not going to lie, we've had some really good conversations on this show and talked to some really great people. Everyone from Shannon Watts with Permitless Carry to, you know, candidates that spoke to us about the barriers to running for office. But today, I'm a little bit giddy about what we're talking about, because today we're speaking my love language, which is year-round neighborhood organizing, building democratic infrastructure in Texas, and turning out voters so that we can start flipping some seats and holding the ones that we have made progress on. And so today I've got three incredible people that have been connected and supporters of Blue Action Dems here with us. Carrie Collier-Brown is the founder and president of Blue Action Democrats. She's also a lawyer and mom and all of the other things. We've got Julie Oliver, who is a board member of Texas Blue Action Democrats. She is also the executive director of Register to Vote and Ground Game Texas. She was also the congressional nominee for Congressional District 25 in 2018 and 2020. And we have Ed Espinosa here with us, who is the president of Progress Texas and who generously lets me come on here and talk about all the things that I want to talk about weekly. So thank you for joining us to have this conversation. You know, we're seeing all of this angst on the internet for good reason. It's been a completely shit year in politics, right? I mean, we're rightly so need a place to come and talk about things that are bothering us and share what's happening in our world. But that doesn't flip seats. And that isn't going to be the thing that necessarily makes a difference. It can certainly help inform voters. It can certainly help, teach people about what's going on. But we need to take action around it. And that's sort of the foundation of why Blue Action Dems was started. And so, Carrie, tell me about that. Tell me about why you wanted to start Blue Action Democrats and what was your motivation for doing so?
Well, it's hard to believe that was 4 years ago now. It just feels like forever ago. So much has happened. But like a lot of people, I wanted to get more involved. I wanted to elect better people to actually represent us. And I wasn't finding any of that. I was going to all of the things and trying to find a group that was that I could just easily plug into. I had a full-time job. I had 1-year-old twins plus, an elementary school kid. Like, I didn't have a lot of time, but I wanted to be able to make a difference. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to start my own damn group. And seemed a little nuts now that I think about it. But I went around and there were a lot of other, busy working parents who also were looking for the same thing that I was. And at the time, I was living in Southwest Austin, which, to our horror, we realized had all been shoved into these districts represented by people who didn't really care to represent us, who didn't weren't part of the community, didn't visit the community, didn't answer emails, didn't answer phones, none of that. So we sat around my neighbor's table in December of 2017 and literally wrote the blueprint for Blue Action Democrats. And I remember at the time what I had written at the top of the page was the Get Shit Done Club. That's what we wanted to do. We didn't really know how we were going to do that. None of us were political professionals at all. But we just knew that something needed to be done. And we sort of looked around and were like, okay, I guess we're the ones who are going to be the ones to get this done in our neighborhood. So we had our first meeting in January of 2018. 120 people showed up, and we set up a PAC so that we could take money. And we collected so much money that day, I think more than $3,000. which was huge for this group of neighbors who didn't know what they were doing. And then we just started block walking and didn't stop and would try things. And it was very much sort of guerrilla politicking. When you don't know what you're doing, but you're really motivated, you'll just kind of try anything. And if it works, you keep doing it. And if it doesn't work, okay, well, that didn't work and we'll try something else.
Well, and I think an important part of that story, too, is that y'all were sort of feeling left out of the conversation. You know, you mentioned you had representatives that weren't coming out and talking to you, but you also didn't have necessarily Democratic support or infrastructure that was also coming out and talking to you. So that was a huge group of voters that were being left out of the conversation, that nobody was reaching out to, nobody was educating them and asking them to come vote. And the outcome of that first cycle was flipping, you know, a couple of seats, Vicki Goodwin's House seat, you know, Paige became the city councilwoman, Paige Ellis, and, you know, seeing some real gains in that neighborhood due to that activity. And I think that's happening, you know, in so many neighborhoods in Texas, right? People just aren't being talked to and invited to come to the table. And so tell me about, you know, Blue Action has experienced growth. We're operating now in other neighborhoods. And so did you, when you sat down at that table, imagine that you would, you know, become a statewide organization, or did you always think you would be focused there?
I mean, I remember we sort of jokingly talked about that, but I don't think any of us actually thought that would happen. I mean, we when we set up the name Blue Action Democrats dash Southwest Austin, it was that with, you know, sort of like, well, maybe somebody else will want to be Blue Action Democrats too, and we won't sort of limit us to just being a Southwest Austin Democrats or something like that. And you're right, like people kind of came to us and said, how do we join you? And I was like, let me teach you how to fish and you guys how to start your own group. And we did that for 2018 and expanded into Bexar County, San Antonio area and other areas of Travis County. And it, you know, it increased the number of volunteers, local leadership and voters. And then we started the Texas Blue Action, the parent organization, with the idea to give those local volunteer-run chapters the organizing tools that a well-funded candidate would have access to. So access to the voter file, access to social media, access to, you know, fundraising, you know, being able to pull all of their awesome creative local ideas into action in a way that they wouldn't have to start from scratch like we did back in 2017, 2018.
Mm-hmm. So for those of you that are listening that might not be aware of what Blue Action Democrats does, you know, we're essentially a year-round neighborhood organizing model that teaches people, gives them the tools and the resources to build infrastructure in their neighborhood. And so, you know, to Carrie's point, we started out as one. We now have eight chapters. We extend from Williamson County to Houston and are rapidly growing in people wanting to do this model that we put forward. And so, Ed, you're here as somebody who's not, you know, on the board of Blue Action Democrats or, you know, on the staff of Blue Action Democrats. So as somebody looking in from the outside, how did they first land on your radar? And why do you think what they're doing is important?
So I'm actually a dues-paying member of Blue Action Democrats.
I did know that, but, you know, yeah. I didn't want it to seem like, you know.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, it is from the outside, right? Because I live in Southwest Austin and the Democratic clubs are things that I'm familiar with, but I don't really go to all that often. I just get a lot of politics in my day-to-day here at Progress Texas. I'm at the office right now. But Blue Action Democrats is different because of that action effort. You know, it's not a club to sit around and just kind of talk about issues and policy, which is fine. The other groups do that too, but really emphasizing the action, the block walking and empowering people to do other things, I think is really important because it's what we're talking about with Blue Action Democrats and with Progress Texas and with Ground Game is year-round organizing. And what we're looking at here is, it's something that I like to say is that democracy is like a muscle and that you have to exercise it to keep it healthy. And it can't start and end with elections, and it can't start and end with the legislative session. Those times in between are really critical. So we've just finished our third special session, fourth overall leg session of the year here in October. The election is a year away. there is a lot to be done between now and then. And the problem is, for years past, is that while there was a lot to be done, there wasn't always a lot being done. And that's not the fault of anyone in particular. That's just a reality in that campaigns tend to set up shop and then leave when it's over. That's just how it works out. So to have organizations like the three of ours that are here, I think is critical to our long-term success, not just in Texas, but around the country as well.
Sure. I mean, I think you make a really good point that, you know, I think traditionally the model has just been to set up shop, you know, and work for 6 months. But what that does for the voter is becomes a transactional relationship, right?
That's right.
And what we're talking about doing and why I love what Ground Game and what Blue Action is doing is that we're very much creating relationships with the voters.
Yep.
And what we know in Texas is that there were more than 5 million of them that didn't show up this last cycle. So in addition to registering and bringing new voters to the table, one of the things that we can do well with year-round organizing is connecting with those unlikely voters and getting them to, you know, to your point, exercise that model and become an identity voter, right? That it's something they do.
One thing, because you said it's a transactional relationship, but I think the problem is that there wasn't even really the relationship, right? It was just transactional.
It was just transactional. That's a great point.
And a lot of the way that normal people look at politics is that they look at it like maybe it's the stock market and they don't know where to begin and they get overwhelmed. And because of that, they just don't get involved. And that's why it helps to have people like Blue Action Democrats and Ground Game and Progress Texas to be there to build those relationships in between and build that trust and offer resources. Be like, hey, here's a voter guide. Hey, someone's going to come to your door and talk to you about this. Also, if neither of those work out, maybe we can help you with some messages in the media that you can repeat with confidence to help, you know, amplify the things that you believe in. And all of that's critical. And that's why I'm so pleased to see that the progressive ecosystem, as it were, is stronger now than it has ever been. But, you know, things don't happen overnight. They happen over time. And I think that what we're doing here is definitely a step in the right direction.
Yes, I mean, I completely agree that, you know, all change is incremental. And but also back to your point about, you know, voters not engaging. A lot of times, you know, they just don't have time, right? If you're a parent that just is trying to put food on the table and, you know, get your kids to school and hope you can pay your mortgage, the last thing you're paying attention to, right, is the election, you know, where I would argue maybe it could be the first thing because it's the opportunity to change some of your circumstances, but you know, that's just not possible. And so the opportunity of what we're all doing here in the progressive space and collaborating and working together and setting up this ecosystem of year-round organizing is that we give the resources to people to be an informed voter without them needing to take the time to do it, which makes it easier for them than to show up. You know, it removes some of those barriers. Like, we get so many calls about the sample ballots that we give out, right? Like, where's my sample ballot? I mean, literally, it's like, you know, people really rely on it now, and I love that. And so I think it's really important. And, you know, Julie, you've been a candidate. And so I would like to hear your perspective as a candidate as to why you think working with progressive organizations and why you think working with, you know, Blue Action Democrats was helpful in your campaign.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when I first decided to run in late 2017 for the 2018 cycle, I had no money at all. And obviously it was in a very gerrymandered district. So people weren't looking at this as like, oh, this is a winnable district. This is a flippable district. But I still believe that, you know, the folks in this district needed to be talked to, deserved to have a conversation with somebody. And what I loved about the Blue Action Democrats is y'all recognize that. I think we were having epiphanies all at the same time, by the way, in that late 2017 time period. And we realized that because we had elected officials, especially at the national level, who were not coming back and listening to their communities, they were not engaging with them, they were not having town halls with them, many people just felt left out. And there's a sense of, you know, defeat, right? And like, why should I vote? It doesn't matter. I feel angst. I don't feel good about circumstances, but, you know, I vote and nothing changes. And so I also think that when you, to Ed's point, when folks stop voting because it doesn't feel like things matter, you know, we allow kind of the worst of the worst to get elected. And yep. it is muscle memory. And we've got to start. What I liked about Blue Action Dems is y'all really looked at every election as equally as important as a presidential election. I mean, I believe that.
Every year is an election year.
Every year.
Exactly. There's no off years, you know, and I've seen that's sort of become a buzz this year. Like there's no off years, like even Vote Save America is using that or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. Well, welcome to the club. Because yeah. There's a lot of people that have always thought there were no off years.
Yeah, there are no off years. And that's what, I mean, y'all prioritized that every election was an important election, even if it was a municipal election, even if it was just a bond election, even if it was a primary or runoff. Every election was so incredibly important. And the, you know, studies show and data shows that folks need to be talked to multiple times before they actually feel valued. Mm-hmm. And feel like committing to something, right? So if you're talking about a transaction through a television, which is how politicking has been done on the Democratic side for the last, you know, several decades, right? There's not even a transaction there. It's just somebody behind a screen who's saying some stuff and you flip to another channel to not watch it. When somebody is actually showing up on your doorstep and having a conversation with you, and it can be the candidate, it can be volunteers, it can be paid canvassers, there is something to be like, wow, wait, you think I'm important? And you have to keep going back and you have to keep making those touches multiple times. But I do believe that making those multiple touches results in a voter. And then that voter is starting to exercise that voting muscle memory, you know, or developing that muscle memory to want to go vote in every election. And so it is inherently important. And I'll just say from a candidate perspective, you know, in 2020, because the, you know, we had high expectations for Texas, right? Mm-hmm. We weren't really kind of understanding the effect Trump was having on our state, especially on non-voters in our state. Mm-hmm. I think that came out of the blue, right? Every candidate that had made gains in 2018, all of us took steps back in 2020, except for my precincts in Blue Action Dem precincts. Mm. I may have lost one percentage point, maybe at most in a couple of them, but most of them were stayed right in line with the 2018. That didn't happen anywhere else in my district, except my Blue Action Democrat precincts.
I just want to say, I love knocking doors, man. Like, and maybe Carrie can talk more about this and like how you can see like when people are intimidated about the idea of going to someone's door. But after you've hit that, like really quickly, the like fourth or fifth door, it goes away really quickly. And you just start to have a whole new level of engagement and enthusiasm. You see that people are pretty nice, especially if your lists are cut the right way. And I know that Blue Action has had people who were just intimidated by this many times who have become regular door knockers after that, after the fact.
Yep.
Yes.
I always think of it as just meeting friends that you haven't met yet. And these are, we have people walking in their own neighborhood. So it's really created this community of active citizenship where people have made really good friends and they will sign up to block walk together, or they'll become a block captain where they say they're going to be responsible for a couple of streets and they really get to know those neighbors and make sure that they have the information about any upcoming election. So I love that we've created the community, and that's why I think people keep coming back and that they bring their friends to come and knock doors the next time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you've both mentioned two very valuable points. And one that is, Carrie, that, you know, we're organizing by neighborhood. So we're having people talk to their neighbors, right? And again, it's just people they hadn't met before, but that live there. And that builds a camaraderie in the area that you live in. And it's easier to go knock on the door of your neighbor and say, hey, I live a couple houses down. And, you know, I'm knocking your door today to talk about this. And arguably, you know, the most important election is going to be what's down ballot and the policy, you know, related to that, and being able to have that conversation with your neighbor, even if it's, hey, isn't that pothole down the street annoying? Like, let's get it filled, right? Like, whatever it is that brings people to the table, it's easier to focus and connect with somebody when you're talking about, you know, policy issues that are affecting your community. And then to Ed's point about, you know, usually if you have good turfs and the information is accurate, you're knocking on friendly doors, right? And so that's the importance of using strategy and data. right? That we don't need to just be throwing noodles out there, canvassing every house in a neighborhood. You know, we really can use the resources that we have to ensure that we're targeting the right voters. And I think, Julie, I see you want to say something, and I was going to say, and I'm sure from a candidate perspective, you know, that matters too.
Well, I think what's really interesting, you know, I think also sometimes neighbors are afraid to talk politics with other neighbors for fear of rejection. And, you know, especially in some of these suburban neighborhoods, there are assumptions that some of these suburban neighborhoods are really red. And the reality is they're not. Mm-hmm. And that's what these block captains can say, hey, you know, when somebody's like, wait a second, why are you talking to me? You're going to out me as a Democrat. Shh. And like, oh no, that person over there and that person over there and the person behind you. And I mean, and then they start realizing they actually are not alone. It's just, we've been trained to don't talk religion or politics with people. And so out of that fear of rejection or offending somebody, we haven't done that, but it's, I always say that the front porch is the safest space. It really is. It's a safe zone to discuss both, really, religion and politics. And for whatever reason, even if you accidentally get the wrong person at the household who doesn't see eye to eye with you, I think building even those bridges are really important to show that, look, we aren't these crazy, you know, whatever idea you have a Democrat is, we aren't that. I'm just a normal person here. I'm just a mom who wants to talk to you and, you know, let's have a polite discussion. And the 4 years that I've done this, and I myself have probably knocked thousands of doors throughout 13 counties, I've only had one person slam the door in my face. One person. That was it.
I have a funny story. You were talking about, Julie, sometimes if the wrong person answers the door or something like that. So this was like the 2018 primary, and my fiance and I were out knocking doors in Southwest Austin with some Blue Action Dems lists, and we go to a home of a 3 of 3 Democratic primary, 3 of 3 Democratic voter. In other words, a Democrat who has voted in 3 of the 3 last elections, and she wasn't home, but her husband was. And he answers the door, and he was like, oh man, you guys are in the wrong place. We are all Republicans here. And I just look at my list and I didn't say this to him, but I was like, well, not all of you.
Right. I mean, that happens. I've had that happen a number of times where I've knocked on the door out in areas like Lockhart, and the woman will peek her head out and literally look around to see if her neighbors are out, you know, and say something like, man, my husband votes Republican. He doesn't know I vote Democrat, you know, but I do. But you can keep walking. Like, I'll show up and I'll keep doing it. But like, my neighbors can't see you, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, people need to remember when they go into the voting booth, like, nobody knows how they vote, you know, or who they vote for, essentially. And that we're certainly not going to out anybody at the door, you know, because we want to keep them coming back and voting again. So, I mean, Carrie, I think that, you know, I would love to hear from you. Why do you think it works? What was it about, you know, creating this kind of organizing model that you felt like was important? You know, aside from making sure that you know, we were getting shit done and that it was action oriented, what was it about, you know, this idea that you feel like works and why you wanted to do it?
I think because it's not candidate focused. It is community representation focused, I think is a better way to say it. And that it is neighbor to neighbor, that personal connection, even if you don't know someone personally, to say, hey, I'm Carrie and I live over on such and such street, or my kids go to school here, that you have a community connection with the people that you're talking to. And then our model is based on the idea that the persuadable Democratic voter is not getting someone to vote from Republican to Democrat. I think that probably happens, but I think it's really hard. Our model is built on persuading non-voters who already agree with us to show up and vote. And I think that's more rewarding. It's easier to talk to people. They already agree with you. It's just giving them the information about making it easy, like going and researching, as Ed said, it can sort of look like the stock market to people. And we've made it super easy. This is what's on your ballot. I'm happy to be a resource and tell you what I think about any of these. And voters have come to rely on Blue Action voter guides and volunteers to show up at the door and tell them when and where they're supposed to go vote next.
And so, you know, Julie, I'd like to hear, why do you think it works?
Oh my gosh. We are relational creatures, right?
Right.
We do crave community on some, I think we're naturally hardwired that way. There are a few of us who aren't, but yeah, I think most of us are. And I, you know, what's even, I think, more apparent is over this last year of not living, or year and a half of not living in community, we've seen how polarized we can get because we're not living in community. You know, I didn't coin this term, but I love it. Community moderates people. Hmm. When you're having to live with other people who don't have the same, and like interact with them, who don't have the same ideas or values or, you know, like politics, you do have to moderate because you don't want to scream and yell and, you know, do what people do out of their thumbs and their fingers on Facebook comments. You would never do that to somebody's face. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's healing, quite honestly. And especially since our nation is really, really torn apart right now, we need a lot of healing. And so I would encourage folks, go have conversations with your neighbors, find out who they are, find out what is important to them. Mm-hmm. And then you, especially if you are somebody who's really engaged and really follows things and you know candidates really well, they'll come to you and say, hey, who do I vote for in this particular race? I don't, there are two choices. I don't know who to pick. And I think probably all of us on that call have people reaching out to us saying, who would you pick? And mm-hmm. we give them our little scorecards of who we'd pick.
I mean, we all have the friends right now that just say, who should I vote for? Right. That happens. they just want you to tell them.
To Julie's point about moderation, you know, it's also surprising that you'll find people who have maybe a different ideology than you do, but that your differences really may only be on one or two issues. And you may actually find that you're aligned on other issues. Like, I know a lot of people who are pro-guns and pro-climate, like protecting the climate, right? I mean, it's because they happen to be hunters and they like to go and experience the outdoors. So, you know, that sense of community is going to be what brings those things together. But I want to talk about psychology for a second, because we talk about like why the door knocking is so powerful and why the relationships are so powerful. And there is a case study that I think is really important from the 2008 campaign when Obama was running for president. And I was working on an independent expenditure campaign for him back then. And the case study that we talked about for years after that was the difference between the city of El Paso and the city of Las Cruces, New Mexico. El Paso had a 38% turnout in that election. Las Cruces had a 62% turnout, 24-point difference. But the thing is, it's the same TV media market. So if you're buying ads in Las Cruces, which back then New Mexico was a swing state, so they were buying ads, you're buying ads in both media markets. The news stations there cover both cities. All the voters are seeing the same thing. Now, you can say that field accounted for some of the difference, but most science says that field is good for 2 points. Let's say generously 4 points. Let's say 10 points. In this case, you still have a 14-point gap. So what is the difference? And the difference is the psychology in that the voters in Texas did not think their vote made a difference. The voters in New Mexico knew that they were a competitive state and that their vote would make a difference, and it drove turnout. And you see this everywhere. You can look at it in the 2008 primaries between Obama and Clinton. You can look at it in the 2016 election, both in the primaries between Sanders and Clinton, but again in the general election. Competitive elections drive turnout. And when people feel like their vote is going to make a difference, they will show up. But it's not limited to just the competition. It's also includes those relationships that we're talking about. Going to the door and saying, hey, I represent this organization. I represent this community. I'm here representing myself as your neighbor, and your vote is important, and I would like to invite you to be a voter. I would like to invite you to participate. And when people feel like they're invited in and that they're valued, that changes their engagement completely. And we have seen this organizing work on a grand scale here in Texas over the past few years, and we just have to keep doing it because people's votes do matter, and it is making the state more competitive, and we are getting closer.
And I love that you just said that, because, you know, what we're hearing and what we probably all see with what has happened with redistricting maps is that people are like, we can't out-organize this. We can't out-organize this. And there's this, you know, conversation that's happening that you can tell people feel very disgruntled. But the reality is, we have 3 statewide top of the ticket seats that are up that every single vote will matter. So even if you feel like, you know, my House district is so gerrymandered, there's no way we can flip it, every single vote is going to matter at the top of the ticket this year. And so we really, I think, need to make, and, you know, this is your wheelhouse, Ed, in messaging, and maybe you can help us at Blue Action Dems with, you know, honing that for this cycle. But, you know, continuing to say to people, your vote does matter. Doesn't matter what happened with these maps, right? Because if we can change these seats, if we can flip, you know, and run competitive candidates in other areas that do have a chance of flipping, like, it matters. We can't get disgruntled and we can't give up.
They can't gerrymander a statewide race.
Yeah.
And exactly as, and I know that Julie has a lot of data on this, but like one of the things we suffer from are Democrats in safe Democratic districts who stay home.
Yep. Ding, ding, ding.
That's a whole show, Ed. That's a whole show. Like, are we doing that next week? Because that's a thing. And it's a big thing, right?
The Democrats who are in safe seats have an obligation to get turnout as high as they can. They should no longer, we should not let them be sitting on piles of cash that try to scare off primary opponents. They should use that to help elect more friends to up and down the ballot and get more Democrats out to vote so that we can have any shot at all to win statewide elections. Because all we can do is kind of eat into our loss in rural areas. And then what we're left with is we have to, as Ed says all the time, we got to run up the score in the urban areas and in the districts, which is, you know, they have packed the Democrats in this time. We did such a good job of turning out the suburbs and the urban areas that they have just, you know, packed us all in together. So we have less of an opportunity to flip some of those Republican districts. But that's all the more reason why those super safe Democratic districts that have like 20, 30, 40, 50 point margins, that is also trying to, you know, dilute our voice in our own democracy. That is also trying to draw us out of representation. And we on the ground, we need the help, and we should absolutely hold Democratic elected officials feet to the fire on this issue. Like, I'm on a rampage about this right now.
Well, and to that point, y'all, you know, back to it being a big election year statewide, urban areas are exactly what you just said, the ones that are going to gap that vote difference. And if we have congressional representatives that are solid D's that are not turning out voters because they feel like they're safe so they don't need to do the work, we're harming our chances at our statewide, right? So it matters. And Democrats need to be on the same team here. Like, just because you're a safe Democrat in Texas does not mean you get to hang up your hat, you know? And also, you know, back to competition, you know, it does drive turnout. And so, you know, we need to be providing that competition and holding their feet to the fire, like you said, to ensure that we see that turnout. We need the numbers. There's no way around it.
So I'll just throw a couple of stats at y'all, because I do love the stuff. I love looking at the numbers. One, all of our safe congressional Democrats fell far below the state average for turnout. And look, I get that there are systemic barriers to some of these communities' abilities to vote. I mean, clearly Republicans spent almost an entire 3 legislative sessions trying to, you know, hamper voting going forward, even though we've had hampered voting in the past. But if our safe Democratic seats had just been at the state average for turnout, that, you know how many more votes that would have been? 447,000 votes just to go to the state average. Just the
that
state
hurts.
Average.
That hurts right here.
Hurts. And then the other thing is, and I, you know, my math could be wrong because I was kind of working in round numbers, but I think we lost the state house by 23,000 votes. When I went back and looked at the, you know, 17 competitive, we only needed 9 to take over the state house, right? We lost by 23,000 votes, and our safe congressional Democrats collectively sat on $10.6 million. On November 4th, they had $10.6 million of cash on hand in their campaign accounts. Imagine those 9 seats each getting an extra infusion of $1 million and what that could have done.
or giving it to the party, or, you know, that could actually, we could push to build this kind of infrastructure. Like, we expect candidates to do all of the work and to start from scratch every 2 years. It's an insane system that we've built for ourselves here.
Well, and when we're doing the Blue Action Model, which is building year-round volunteer organizing infrastructure in the neighborhoods, you know, in the areas that we had a flippable house district, had we had that infrastructure and then an investment like that, is boots on the ground, knocking doors that are going to help all the candidates on the ballot, not just the house seat, not just the city, but everybody from bottom to top. So, you know, even if they made investments in organizations that are on the ground and already have the volunteer army, that sometimes candidates don't have the resource, right? They have trouble getting volunteers. So it could go a long way, and we do need to make sure we're really holding their feet to the fire.
What it does is it creates sustainability, because when you have campaigns that come and go, that is an unsustainable attempt to try and seek change, right? And you need something in between. And we do have state and county parties and local clubs and such too, but what we've learned over the years is it's not enough, right? And this is a big state, we need all the help we can get. So if we're going to go for that sustainability, what we have to keep in mind is that while campaigns come and go, organizations like ours, Progress Texas, Blue Action, and Ground Game, are here to stay. And that's the bridge that gets us between the ledge session and the campaign and back to the next ledge session and on again. So if you're wanting to get involved, you can look up Progress Texas, you can look up Blue Action Democrats, you can look up Ground Game. Plenty of other allies out there as well. Texas Freedom Network, Move Texas, Common Cause, the list goes on. There's something for everybody, basically, right? And something that people can get involved in. And look, it doesn't mean that you have to be there every day all the time. We all need breaks. But to even just stay involved and know that maybe to be able to name one or two bills that are happening at the legislative session, that probably still puts you in the 1% of how much the public is engaged in the process. But it all makes a difference. It all matters.
It does. And to your point, you know, anybody who's listening, you can do 30 minutes a week makes a difference, an hour a week. You know, find a time that you have and then find the thing you like to do, whether it's writing postcards or making phone calls or, you know, canvassing, which the biggest rate of return is with canvassing, just, you know, that little plug. And I know we're dropping in a chat, a link in the chat that has all of our upcoming events that has an option for everybody. There are postcarding events. There are a number of canvassing events and a number of text banking options as well, from Austin to Houston. So take a look and see if there's something that you're interested in. And like Ed said, you know, if you want to get involved, look up Ground Game Texas, check out, you know, blueactiondems.com, check out Progress Texas and see where you're going to fit, because we all hold a stake in this fight. And every little bit, like Ed said, helps. And so I really want to thank all three of you for joining today and having this conversation. I really believe that we are going to make a big difference in 2022. I really think we're going to see gains in Texas. I feel the same energy that we did after Trump got elected, and that brought a lot of people out in 2018. So I feel like we just have to channel that and bring people into the fold and keep collaborating in this progressive space. So Ed, thank you so much for hosting this podcast on your platform of Progress Texas and allowing us to get together and have this conversation today. I hope everybody who's listening will come back next week at the same time, and we can have another conversation about something happening in crazy Texas politics.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast, a production in affiliation with Progress Texas. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com and also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.